Good morning, good people. I'm Kiplin Primus, your host for The Local Take on Jazz 91.9 WCLK. And this morning, we're joined in the studio by Ebony Ruffins, the Vice President for Local Media Development with Comcast. Ms. Ruffins, welcome.
Good morning.
I'm so glad you're here. We talk a lot about film and documentaries, and you're here specifically to talk about Hope and Fury.
Yes.
So could you tell our listeners, what is Hope and Fury about?
Well, it's a beautiful documentary that premiered earlier this year, and we have at Comcast the distinct pleasure of carrying it forward on our on-demand platform and in live events with students such as with the Clark Atlanta University student body throughout the rest of the year. So the full title is Hope and Fury, MLK, the Movement, and the Media. And it pretty much captures the essence of the content, which is really an assessment of how leaders within the civil rights movement used the power of the media, particularly visual and print media, to awaken America around the shame and injustices that were being experienced within the 50s, 60s, and even further extending to today. So it's incredibly powerful. And the company, Comcast, NBC Universal, all of us are really, really, really proud of it.
Now, why did you mention your partners, but why was this story a story that was important enough for Comcast to get involved?
Well, our chairman for the NBC News Group, Andy Lack, is in fact one of the executive producers and championed this content end to end. And I'm excited. I know you'll have an opportunity to talk with one of the executive producers and directors who can speak more to that relationship and to the creative direction of that content. But for Comcast, NBC Universal, we really have been a part of the ecosystem for allowing citizens to get information for years and years and years. And think about even the 50 years ago, the March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom. It's reached 55 years now, but we were the radio station that was bringing the voice of Dr. King and so many others who took the podium that day to the masses. And so when you hear elected officials even today talk about how the movement would have been, John Lewis always says, the movement would have been like a bird without wings, but for the media, think of us as the connector. We really are. It's kind of the handshake between what's actually happening and then how do you get it out? Well, you get it out through the media.
You mentioned that this story is even timely today. Mm-hmm. And when you think about things that are going on or being exposed via the media, how does Hope and Fury either align or speak to some of those things?
Well, it's a unique perspective. A lot of documentaries, and I'm speaking as someone who has co-produced a documentary, who was in news for many, many years, takes a different take on what happened during the civil rights era because it's very much focused on the relationship with the media and the technology that brought the content to bear, right? And technology plays a big part. We think about what's happened in media. We've gone from telegram to radio to TV to now being content producers and extenders through your smartphone. And this film, thankfully, takes us through what happens with technology and how even in the opening, I don't want to give too much of it away, how now, because of the power of technology, the power of a cell phone and a Wi-Fi signal, the world is getting closer together, not just to each other, but in many cases to the injustices that we're experiencing, not just in our country, but all around the world.
When you said that about the Wi-Fi and the globalization, how everyone is sharing, it was reminding me of the riots in Ferguson when they were using tear gas, and you actually had people tweeting from Palestine saying, this is what you need to do, you know, to be able to operate and take care of the tear gas.
Yeah, what a difference, right? You know, and people in Palestine, and even my parents always tell a story about learning about various marches that happened in the country while they were in Europe and being reliant on the photographs, being reliant on the quotes and having to wait 24 hours for that print cycle to hit. Now we don't have to wait. I mean, in real time, you can see live streams, a tweet. The barriers to entry for media content producers, there is none, in fact. When I say lowered, we've completely eclipsed barriers to entry because of technology. And so when you think about Comcast and the relationship between Comcast and NBC Universal and how it works together, it's very much a terrific partnership. And so for content like this, it makes a ton of sense for Comcast Corporation to stand behind it and to do everything we can to get it out to students and other public venues across the country.
And when you think about this context, providing a historical representation of how media truly changed the movement, you mentioned your parents looking for the pictures. We know some of the things that galvanized the civil rights movement were the pictures that we, you know, they're imprinted on our minds. You know, the dogs and Bull Connor, the Emmett Till funeral with the open coffin, the bombs that blew up the church in Birmingham.
That's right.
If not for those images, you know, you kind of wonder where we would be. And then you juxtapose that to what's going on right now with attacks on the media and attacks that are, you know, causing us to question the media in ways that we may not have done. How does that impact your group? And how do they feel that this documentary kind of adds a new perspective, or at least a historical perspective, on the power of the media and what happens when you kind of undergird or loosen that power so that it's, you know, everything now is fake news?
Yeah, there's so much. Oh, there's so much depth in what you just said. And I want to go back to the original question, the but for question, but for the images of Emmett Till and but for the images of the 16th Street Baptist Church bombing, the aftermath of that, where would we be? And I ask that question really often, and I have the privilege in parallel to having a team that supports free screenings across the country. We also lead the Voices of the Civil Rights Movement platform, which is a series of interviews with people who participated in the March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom of 63 and subsequent movements. And I often enjoy asking them that question and say, you know, what if we didn't have your story, or what if you didn't have the photos, or what if there wasn't a member of the press there to capture that experience? And without a doubt, unanimously, there is agreement that we wouldn't be where we are, that there is a depth of reliance in both the oral history, written history, photographic proof, and nowadays video, and more profound than that, live video, that's needed to drive not just conversations forward, but policy change. And so I wouldn't go as far as to say that today we have a crippling of the media. In fact, I think it's stronger than ever. And there's a hunger and a desire, particularly for young people, to jump into the conversation. The conversation looks and feels a lot different. And you've got many arguments to bear that say, is the strength of a tweet on par with foot soldiers who march down the street with a picket sign? And I would say yes, it is, because of the ability of the reach, right, of how far it can go, just as far as you can walk. That tweet certainly does have prominence. When we talk about the larger conversation, what is the larger landscape of conversation when you're thinking about civil rights and civil activism, that social media and new media certainly plays a role.
And when you mention new media and you continue to talk about the fact that, you know, there is no barrier, anyone can pick up their cell phone and start recording. And today we are somewhat overwhelmed with citizens recording interactions with people who don't look like them, who are questioning their basic humanity in all actuality. You know, you're taking a nap in the wrong place, or you're selling water on the wrong corner. As we continue to, you know, have this cameras kind of media everywhere, I'm often reminded, you know, when you're a little girl, they were like, you know, I might not see what you do, but God will. We have entered a space where almost everyone can see what you do because there are cameras everywhere.
Yeah.
Are we going too far, do you think?
I don't think so. I mean, you're talking to somebody who is a lover of technology. I have to be to do my job, and I'm quite passionate about it at Comcast, and quite passionate about the content that we carry on NBC Universal. But I want to think about those stories. Oh, I think of those stories a little bit different that we see in the news today around various groups calling the police or taking video of individuals or family members because to their own accord they feel threatened in some way, shape, or form. And I would say the baseline for that are issues of identity and belonging, and those kinds of conversations that should be happening in the home around cultural identity, diversity, inclusion, globalism, I don't know, are happening all across the board. And so, and one of the reasons why I'm such a huge enthusiast of technology and a huge enthusiast of television is that in some cases, TV makes up for the gap that happens in the home. And so that's why there's so much relevance when we talk about seeing diverse images on television, diverse images on the news, diverse images in content, diverse images in documentaries. It's because there are not every single household isn't sitting around the dinner table and having conversations about inclusion, race, identity, belonging. But if you have content like Hope and Fury, if you're able to get it on demand, which you can, July of 2019, just say Hope and Fury into your voice remote. It allows for at least an individual, if not having that conversation as a family, an individual can engage with content and hopefully learn something that maybe they hadn't learned from their father or grandparent, that hopefully will kind of lessen this sense that of difference, lessen the sense of, I won't call it discrimination, but lack of intuitive understanding that we're all very, very similar, come from different backgrounds, but we're human beings first and foremost. And content plays a big role in educating and really standing in that gap to communicate across differences.
And you're speaking to the commonality of humankind.
Sure.
When you ever you get to sit down with someone who doesn't look like you or whose, you know, love life isn't like yours or who's, you know, an introvert and you're an extrovert, but when you can have that conversation, you'll generally find that you have a lot in common,
a
no
lot
matter
in common.
How different you are.
That's the human story.
That is the human story. So, Ms. Ruffins, again, this is a wonderful opportunity for folks to engage with our history, with media, and see just a little bit of peek of how the past kind of always ends up in the future. They say you really can't get away from history. It's following us around every day. And some people are going to listen, and they heard you talk about, you know, Comcast and NBC Universal, but they're still going to go, but, you know, Comcast, that's cable. Why is this, you know, why is this something?
So much more. So much more.
Share with us about so much more.
Yeah, I'd love to. You know, I am I'm someone who has been in the media industry for 2 decades and with Comcast for actually more than 2 decades. Hey, and I was sharing a little bit earlier. I was a student at Spelman College many moons ago when the Atlanta University Center still comprised of Morris Brown College, and I miss it. And at that time, media, I think the power of media wasn't as solvent as it is now. It just wasn't as strong. And so, speaking for Comcast, when you think about, oh, it's just a cable company. Not so much. There are the broader opportunities that we're providing through our internet services, through mobile, through the power of our NBC Universal subsidiary, through everything that we're doing for our customers across the footprint and around the world says that we're growing and says that we're committed to the communities wherein we serve. And it gives me pride as a Black woman. It gives me a privilege to know that we prioritize carrying content like Hope and Fury, that we invest in content like Hope and Fury, and make it available on demand at no cost to our customers, and that we invest in content like Voices of the Civil Rights Movement. You can go to civrightsvoices.com and see more than 16 hours of content, interviews with civil rights champions from all over the country of every single color. That's available not just to Comcast customers, by the way, but to anybody for free. So when you think about, well, Comcast, that's just cable. Well, cable is one of the services, one of the many services certainly that we provide and we're really, really proud of as a part of our core business. But there's so much more that we're doing and that we'll continue to do to make access to internet, access to television and really great television, by the way, access to mobile and to other great technology that I encourage people to think about if they don't yet have a relationship with Comcast.
Ebony Ruffins, I want to thank you so much for coming and sharing this great information. And again, it's Hope and Fury, MLK, the movement and media available on demand. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Good morning, good people. I'm Kimplin Primus, your host for The Local Take on Atlanta's Jazz Station, 91.9 WCLK. We have talked with Ebony Ruffin from Comcast NBC Universal about the documentary Hope and Fury. And now we're joined by Phil Bertelsen, the director of that documentary, Hope and Fury. Phil, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Could you share with our listeners why you thought this story would work well in documentary format?
Sure. I've made other documentaries about Black history, including the Civil Rights Movement. And all throughout that process, I've often thought how important it was that we had documentary evidence through news sources, not just print and radio, but television, to help retell the story, because it's in the retelling of the history that we can learn from it and ideally move past it so it's not forgotten. So it's always been an ambition of mine to have an opportunity to tell the story of how the media and the movement impacted one another.
And we're in an environment now where the media is being called out. Everything is being referred to as fake news, and what's real news and what's a reputable news source. And lots of people are questioning, news that they receive. Couldn't have known when you started the documentary that it was going to be released in this kind of time, but how does that impact the story that you're telling?
No, that's an excellent question. I think that bit of history during the late 50s and into the 60s, when television news in particular was just getting its sea legs, there was a lot of doubt and questioning about the reporting because it was telling an inconvenient truth about our democracy. And I think the same is true to today, that there are elected officials and people in power who don't like the fact that the media's role is to, be a watchdog and to call them out on their transgressive. So it's similar in that regard. When the media threatens power, when the media actually is used as a tool for democracy, people who would rather undermine our democratic institutions choose to make the media a culprit rather than a hero. And so we see that happening today. So I guess it suggests that we're in an equally pivotal time historically, where there are a number of our democratic institutions being threatened by people who don't respect the Constitution on which those institutions have been built. And it's our job as journalists and as filmmakers, I think, to call that out. And that's why I think shining a light on that time period was so important and so relevant to today.
I think that is a great answer as well. And one of the things you mentioned is that, in the late 50s, news from television was actually criticized because journalists even said, this isn't real journalism. They're just reading the news, and the newspaper was where you got the real journalism. But, television news went on to become a symbol of truth. And those pictures that were shown, and I'm sure part of the documentary, they changed the way people looked at the civil rights movement. So in this, new time, we've got social media, and it is not a good source of news and information, but we find so many people, that's where they go to first, for their news and information. Mm-hmm. So the pictures and the knowledge that we got from television that changed the movement, do you think social media will get there?
Well, social media has complicated the way in which people receive their information. On the one hand, it's given them opportunities to divine themselves, to find who they are and what their story is within a much larger ecosystem. At the same time, it has, you know, allowed people to only resort to information that they agree with. It has allowed them to live, really, in what you might call an echo chamber, where they're just hearing voices that sound like their own. Back in the 60s, during the Civil Rights Movement, when you only had three major news outlets, you were really compelled to hear things that were not necessarily aligned with your thinking. So there's actually an opportunity there to have your mind changed, to have your opinion swayed. And I mean, we still have that opportunity. It's just whether or not we choose to exercise it and go outside our comfort zone and maybe watch a media outlet that we wouldn't normally watch to get another point of view. But there's just so many opportunities now. It seems easier for most people to just resort to what they know, to what reassures them in their thinking, whether it's accurate or not.
So, Phil, back to your documentary, Hope and Fury, Martin Luther King and the Media. That story, what did you want to tell in that documentary? And what do you think comes out? Why should people look at this documentary to learn more about that period?
You know, when I embarked on that project with my producing partner, Rachel Dretson, we really saw an opportunity to tell a historical story that had relevance today. And so it was important for us to not only talk about the impact that the movement had on the media and vice versa, but to bring it to present day and look at, you know, the current day civil rights movement, probably most notably recognized as the Black Lives Matter movement, and see how they were taking advantage of media and defining their story through the use of social media primarily, to kind of continue the struggle, as it were. So for us, it was important not only to tell the story from the past, but to make it current to present day. And that was really our objective. And, you know, I think people responded to the fact that, you know, as much as things have changed, a lot remains the same.
A lot remains the same. And I know the movie is currently going to HBCU campuses, kind of on a tour. Why did you think it was important to share this information in that way with, you know, the younger generation, so to speak, the Black Lives Matter generation?
Well, I'm really proud that that's happening. And I give all credit to Comcast and NBC Universal, whose decision it was to not only make the film and broadcast it, but to continue to show it and screen it before audiences, particularly younger audiences, because they, more than anyone, should understand that there is a precedent to the time in which they're living, and there's a responsibility that they have to kind of take the torch handed to them, but not only by movement leaders from another time, but from journalists who themselves faced great adversity to try and tell those stories, those difficult truths that a lot of people were unwilling to let be told. A lot of people were made uncomfortable with the truth that, you know, segregation was inhumane, you know, and racism was, and still is, completely vile and undemocratic.
So, Phil, as a journalist, you know, you've created this wonderful documentary. It's out there. What's next for you? And how, as a journalist, has your career changed as you embrace these new technologies and new ways to tell our stories?
Well, what's next is what I'm currently doing, a series on the actually death and life of Malcolm X. So I have embarked on another project with my producing partner, Rachel Dretson, of ARC Media, and we are working to put together a 6-part series on a largely misunderstood but widely heralded leader from an earlier time, whose story is very relevant today in Malcolm X. So I've been digging deeply into his life and death and, you know, the circumstances surrounding his, you know, contribution to our lives today. So how has it changed? My career, I don't know. I can't really say, except that, you know, I continue to do what I love and tell stories that interest me. So I feel very fortunate in that way. And hopefully, you know, people are not only informed, but entertained.
Well, I am glad that you are telling these stories, and I hope you continue for a long time. And I want to thank you for joining us today to share a little bit about Hope and Fury.
Great, Kiplin. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Take care.
All right now. Take care.
This is Kiplin Primus, and you're listening to The Local Take, community engagement from WCLK. If you have a nonprofit organization or community leader you would like us to consider for The Local Take, leave a message at 404-880-6211 or email me at kiplinprimus@gmail.com.